Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Another hour of Sports Daily coming your way. Glad to be with you here in this second hour. We will talk some Kansas City Chiefs in this hour, and I don't know if I'm going to call it rumors. It's sort of rumors, but some implications, perhaps, that they could be looking at their next big extension already. We'll continue the conversations about the Royals, the trade deadline. We should have Tim Fitzgerald in. I know he's traveling a bit, but we hope to hear from Fitz later this hour as well, as we can look across the college sports landscape. All kinds of fun stuff coming up for you, including your calls, your video comments, your voice messages. It's all available for you, whether you're listening, watching to us, or listening in the future or in the past in podcast form on the app. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company, locations east, west, and historic Delano, featuring a rooftop deck. Wichita Brewing Company is pizza and beer made here. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up, fired up here on a rainy Thursday morning. Hope everybody that, you know, has loved ones in any of these rain affected areas, everybody's staying safe here as we deal with all this craziness. It's been, man, this rain, Tommy, is just, we needed it so badly, but man, it's just hammering us all over the country right now.
Not just in this country. How about where the Open Championship is right now? Rainy. It kind of feels like we're there right now with the way the weather is at Royal Port Rush. So day one of the Open Championship, or as you like to call it, the British Open, going on right now. And so it's major championship golf, the final major of the year before we get into the FedEx Cup and then the Ryder Cup and all these different things. And I love it. It's one of my favorite events just because the weather is always a challenge. For the U.S. Open, it's always how difficult the course is. The Masters, it's the legacy, all of that. I love the overseas golf. I love the Europe golf because of just the weather. And this tournament is no exception.
It looks different, too. You know, the fairways are these rolling hills, and it's all almost always link style, which I think is kind of cool. No Hadwin. No Stevens, no Woodland. That's all a bummer. What is the qualification for this thing?
There are a lot of different like you can do a lot of different things to get in. I don't know.
Standing on the PGA Tour.
No. Because it's not put on by the PGA Tour. It's put on by the RNA, the Royal and Ancient.
So this isn't USGA or PGA. No, okay. No. I thought the PGA ran this one.
No,
they don't. I got it. Well, that's a bummer. I hate none of those guys are in there. That makes me want to watch it a little bit less, but we'll see if we've got some star power up there. And Scheffler has been a little up and down, a little more than normal, but there, you know, I see Lowry teeing off now. Rahm's been in there. There's still some names in there. Westwood's finished his first round. So we'll keep an eye on it for you as it makes its way through. I do want to take a minute here. Give me this aside, Tommy, because this may not make a lot of sense. So I don't know if you saw this story. Former Philadelphia Eagle linebacker, former Houston Texan linebacker, Brian Braman has been battling cancer. You might have seen that story. He died, according to Adam Scheffler this morning, 38 years old, an aggressive form of cancer. Really, really sad story. Brian Braman, he went to my alma mater, 38 years old. He was one of the craziest athletes I've ever seen. His story to get to where he made it in the NFL is pretty wild. He's a guy who I don't know how reported it was, but I know he dealt with some homelessness growing up, like he started at like Idaho and then a junior college, he never really could get his feet on the ground, ended up at West Texas A&M where I went to school, and just absolutely lit it up. Just a crazy, crazy athlete, really interesting dude. We used to go to these combine workouts at a Division II school, but at the time they were really good. And they're like, just about every team would show up to these workouts. And I've said it before, you know, quarterbacks and my alma mater sent a bunch of dudes to the NFL. That's not that crazy. Watching their reactions to his workout was crazy. Like every jaw was on the floor. Like, what is, like, the measurables were off the charts. So the fact that he dealt with the things that he dealt with in his life to get there, to get to the league, you might remember there's a famous clip when he was with the Texans. He was on special teams. He ran down and lit a dude up without his helmet on because his helmet had come off. He had the long hair. I don't know if you remember that clip. But anyway, that just to get all the way there and then to have this aggressive form of cancer and die, like, that's just, it just breaks my heart.
Didn't he block a punt in the Super Bowl too? Like, that was kind of like when he was with the Eagles at one point.
Like, Eagles fans, he'll be like an Eagle loved player forever. But just like the wild energy that he played with, both in the pros and in college, was as contagious a football energy as you ever see. Right, he's that dude that you're just like, he gets you fired up just watching the way he plays football. But I hated seeing that story that he was dealing with that, and now of course this morning that he's died. It's just really sad, but a pretty unbelievable journey to the NFL for that dude. That you know, shine a little light on that because it's awesome. It's a sad day, to see that. Great former Buffalo of West Texas A&M and had a lot of success in the NFL and Super Bowl ring, 38 years old. My goodness. Just wanted to get that in there. I saw that during the break. It kind of bummed me out there. All right. So coming up in this hour, as we get you ready for it, the Chiefs, I don't know how much of this you saw, Tommy. There is already rumor swirling about George Karlaftis. And we'll just sort of tease it here as an appetizer. And we'll get into what this is all about. We've wondered what the Trey Smith ripple effect could be in sort of not a negative way, but in like a, okay, if they sign Trey Smith, what happens with XYZ? What happens with Trent McDuffie? What happens with George Karlaftis? What happens with, you know, whatever? Their cap number next year is a mess. It's a mess. Now there's thought, though, what if it could be a positive, right? Like, what if it could be a good thing that they did this Trey Smith deal? In 26, the Chiefs right now, Tommy, are, believe they're $75 million above the cap at the moment. They're going to have some work to do. They're going to have $60 million. They're $60 million over the cap. They're $20 million under the cap right now. Keep those two numbers in mind. We'll dig into that. But they are going to have some challenges next year. So I want to get everybody to the rumors, but then look at that. And I think I'm pretty sure that initial, like, looked like it was maybe a front loaded deal for Trey Smith is not the case with the salary cap and the implications specifically. I think it hits them hard next year, which is interesting. It's really interesting when you look at some of the things that have come around. By the way, have you seen any of this George Karlaftis stuff?
I have. I mean, I've seen the rumors coming out that, you know, that he will be the next person that they, you know, take a look at and try to get a deal done with.
Did you see where the rumors came from?
Yeah, the same guy that so said that.
That's to me, that's
they said that Trey Smith was going to get done, and he's predicted some other things,
yeah,
too.
That's the interesting part. That's the part that I think will be interesting to the listeners.
Is that a
probably
can that be a source? Like, is that a legitimate source?
Listen, you're the journalist. Is anything guy a legitimate source? I fight that battle with social media now all the time. Because who knows? Right, you've got AI bots out there aggregating crap all the time. That it's like, okay, well, I don't know. I think you have to look at a history. We'll tell you what we mean. There is an interesting that's not for effect. I really did need to clear my throat there. There is an interesting a reporter? He calls himself an actuary, NFL shield protector, former insider who got a 4 on his AP bio exam. So clearly likes to have fun on social media.
I mean, his posts use Comic Sans font, if that tells you anything.
Yep, intentionally. And he pretends to be a dog, I think, if I understand this all correctly.
Correct.
But he got Sauce Gardner right. He got Trey Smith right.
He got George Pickens right. Really, he got DK Metcalf right.
Uh huh. There are some other extensions he has sort of put out into the universe. He's called it a white boy summer because these edge rushers keep getting paid, which is that's what I'm trying to like. That's what I'm trying to get to. Like he's been right a lot. We'll just put it that way. But he's also like not taking himself seriously at all, which is the exact opposite of most of what we see on Twitter with people that are trying to report information. So we'll get into all that. How does it tie into George Karloftis and why does it make sense? Right. He could be just connecting dots here, too. I don't know if he's talking to anybody in the Chiefs organization, but we'll take you through all that. It's pretty interesting when we return on Sports Daily. Don't go away. We're coming right back.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, to Sports Daily. On your way to work, I want to keep listening to Sports Daily even after you park the car. With the Odyssey app and Odyssey.com, you can. Just download the app, visit Odyssey.com, or search KFH. As we come back, let's give away a little HTO. You can text to win right now a free cup of iced tea from any three Wichita Metro locations, East Wichita, West Wichita, or in Derby. Just text that keyword tea to the short code 20357. Each entry can go once per day. Message and data rates apply, and come out on Saturday between 11 and 8 when the Cousins Maine's Lobster food truck rolls onto the parking lot there. You can try out some lobster and get some iced tea while you're at it. So check that out Saturday, 11 to 8. All right, Tommy, we come back. So here's what's going on with the George Karloftis rumors. Basically, there is an indication that Karloftis could be up next. Is there any, I don't think there's any other indication than Ricky Scoops on X, which is, it almost feels like a parody account.
I know.
Except he keeps getting things right. He had the Jalen Ramsey trade. He had the DK Metcalf trade. He had the Trey Smith deal. He had, like, he has all these things before they're coming down. And so you're like, okay, well, I guess we got to pay attention here. Now, that's the reason I think people are talking about it. I don't think I've seen any other reporting from, like, you know, people within the organization or anything that it could be up next. But if the guy keeps getting these right and he's been pretty spot on a lot of them, I think we should pay attention. But even more than that, it would make some sense for the Chiefs to make their next move soon. And I think when you get beyond the Trey Smith deal and you start looking at the cap, there are a lot of reasons for that. They have, according to overthecap.com, $20 million of cap space right now. $20 million this year after the Trey Smith deal. Next year, they go to $60 million over the cap, and then you get, you know, beyond that, and it's all, it's probably too far beyond to really start thinking about for us, for our simple brains. But the reality is they have room this year. They don't have room next year. So there is room on one of your guys who's not making much money at all yet to preemptively front load a deal. And that's, I think, more than anything where Karlaftis and McDuffie come into the conversation. Because remember, like, they'll play out this year and they'll play out next year before you can even need to tag them. Now, we see players want to hold out and do all that stuff all the time before their contracts, their rookie deals are done. So while it makes sense, you get them next year on their rookie deals still. But look, they got $20 million right now. It's interesting that it's Karlaftis and not McDuffie that gets brought up. I think it's probably because McDuffie's likely resetting the market. If Sauce Gardner, McDuffie, I think is as good or better than Sauce Gardner. There's a case to be made for it anyway. They're close to where he may reset the market. Karlaftis is not resetting the market. He averages like 8.5 sacks a year. I think he'll be paid a lot. Don't get me wrong. And I'd be hesitant and cautious with that as much as I like the player. But if you're going to front load a deal, this would be the year to front load the deal because they need to clear up money next year.
Yeah, so they would get him through the end of 2026, is that right, in the fifth year option? So they've already exercised that deal. It's interesting because, I mean, don't you think this is Brett Veach playing chess a little bit here, right? Like with the whole thought of like what they've done in getting they traded away Joe Tooney to re-sign Trey Smith to a long-term deal. I mean, this is like playing chess, not checkers, I think, from Brett Veach.
It's going to need to be. So I have a question, though, on our video stream. I got to ask, because people can see this. Now, if you're on the radio, you can't see this. Was that a little dribble of spit there?
I have no idea. Either that or like a bird pooped in the studio and
yeah.
Fell on so my camera lens. I don't know.
Because I look around in here, we do these shows, and there's no judgment cast because on my computer screen and like my keyboard, there's some like dried spit.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's a normal, natural thing. It might have been.
What was that?
Yeah.
Like it's very suddenly we got a big blur on Tommy if you're watching the video stream. So I'm like, what could that, like, did something drop from the ceiling? I'm like, oh no, I bet that was spit.
Pretty sure. But, yeah. I mean, I'm going to own it.
Yeah.
Why try to lie about it? Yeah, I think I did. Yeah,
no, I'm pretty sure that's what it was. I couldn't ignore it because it was very obvious to everybody watching.
It was right on my face.
Yeah, it was like literally covering your face. Yes, it is. It's going to be a chess move, but if you know you want to keep the players, then yeah, there could be some urgency because you'd want as many of those dollars to bleed into this year's cap than before. But what I'll say about next year's, if I go look at Karlaftis's, he's going to be, let me see if I can find him on next year's number. Next year's number for Karlaftis is $15 million. So it's a big number next year, right? This year against the cap, he's at $3.8 million. So I'm going to say this because I don't know for sure. I think if you can make the cap number significantly bigger this year and then lessen it out, especially next year somehow, that's where I think this starts to make some sense. He's going to make 15 against the cap next year anyway. I don't know how much he's worth. Let's just look at a real quick list because I know these guys have reset the market about 15 times, it feels like. So the average right now per year, Miles Garrett has it reset at 40 a year. George Karlaftis is probably, I'll bet you Karlaftis is looking at, TJ Watt wants a new deal. He's at just under 30. Where would you even put him in on this deal? Bradley Chubb is down at 18.
I mean, he's probably a new deal. He's got to be like a low 20s kind of player, maybe.
That's what I'm thinking, which would put him in line maybe with like Andrew Van Ginkle.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look for a young guy who's gotten a deal. Greg Rousseau for Buffalo, I think, has signed a new deal. He's just 25 and he's making 20 a year. That's probably a good one to start with. So let's start there. So he's 25 years old, which I think is about where Karlaftis will be. He's making 20 a year, and it's a contract that $50 million was guaranteed in 30. So I would say you're probably not getting Karloftis for, boy, I'd be surprised if it was less than 25, and I'd be surprised if it was less than 5 years with like four, basically like four guaranteed years, maybe. No, it would. I mean, the fully guaranteed money, just looking at this list, probably going to need to be around 65, 70 million, about 25 a year. Maybe you can do 5 years. That's for Karloftis. That would put him inside somewhere near the top 10, which is what we've thought, right? We've thought he was going to get paid like probably a top 10 pass rusher. If you can do it and you can get it to the point where you front load the money, you convert a lot of it into a bonus, it goes hard against the cap this year, lessens that $15 million cap blow next year, and then only extends out maybe a year, maybe two beyond what you had him for on that rookie deal, then yeah, I do think that probably makes some financial sense for the Chiefs.
Yeah, I think it does too. I mean, because again, like we've been questioning, or you had been questioning, I know, what's the financial benefit to signing Trey Smith long term? And honestly, having this situation right now where you've got open cap space now to then be able to go and prioritize Karloftis or McDuffie, which, by the way, McDuffie on the fifth-year option is actually less than Karloftis. It's like $13 million.
Because he got drafted later.
Right, for sure. So,
he got
drafted earlier. No, he was the 21st overall pick. Karloftis was 30, so McDuffie went higher. Probably position ranked, I would imagine, position play. So McDuffie is a lower number for the option for the fifth year. So I think if you've got that flexibility to be able to front load it, and then with that flexibility you have right now, get somebody locked up in a position where, you know, like if you went out on the open market to try to find Karloftis's replacement, you're going to be paying a lot, or you're going to have to go through the draft again, and you're going to have to try to do it again and try to find somebody else. If you've got a player, like we all know Karloftis is not the top edge rusher in the league, but he doesn't have to be the top edge rusher in the league.
He's good.
Yeah. He's not the
best. And they need him desperately.
And they need him desperately because really outside of Chris Jones, like he's the only other pass rusher they've got on that roster that is consistent, right? I know I like Charles Omenihu, but he hasn't been overly healthy.
You're spot on.
He hasn't been overly healthy. So I think that having Karloftis locked up, and from a financial perspective, the freedom and the flexibility to do that right now, that does, I think, lend credibility to the reporting and the rumors that they're going to try to do that.
If you can get this deal done to soften the blow on next year's cap number, I'll rubber stamp it. You know, like, do I think he's a top 10 defensive end in this league? I think that's debatable.
He's probably around 10. Like, he's probably right there, you know, maybe like low teens.
Yeah.
He's better than 15. I think he's at least a top 15 edge rusher in the league.
Let's just real quick. Let's go. When was he drafted? 2022?
Yeah, 2022.
Okay. Let's look at sacks since 2022. And that's, you know, he's not in the top. He's 23rd since his rookie year. Let's then give him a benefit of the doubt on a rookie year and go 2023. So the last two seasons, he is 20th. I'll give you top 20.
I mean,
and there are 32 teams in the league. So that's saying something. That means there are 60. That means there are 66 starting ends essentially in football. Karloftis is in the top third of them. Yes, I will agree with that. Yes.
You know, ESPN, Jeremy Fowler posted a list of the top 10 edge rushers entering this season, and Karloftis was not in the top 10, but he did get honorable mention. And there were a bunch of players that didn't, you know. So, I mean, if you take 15, that into account, 20, top 15, yeah, you know.
Yeah. And that means he's in the top third, right? Like he's in the top third. So, I'm good with it. That, you know, his salary by the end, if they did that deal we just said, his salary by the end, that's where he would be getting paid. So it makes sense. It makes sense. And the Chiefs need it, and it's been harder to find for them They may be able to keep him and McDuffie, but it's been harder for them to find pass rushing than it has been high quality players in the secondary in the Steve Spagnuolo era.
Also, by the way, the top eight guys, at least in this ranking from Jeremy Fowler, like the edge rushers in the league, it's very, very, very top heavy. Like, you've got major, massive stars in the game that are at the very top, make so much money. And, you know, Miles Garrett and TJ Watt, Aiden Hutchinson, Max Crosby, like, you know, they're Will Anderson. Like, there are big time names that are at the very top. Carl Loftus isn't one of those guys, but he's the very next tier down.
He's a guy that's going to sniff Pro Bowls, probably make a few, have seasons with double-digit sacks. He's a guy that I think all fans and his teammates and coaches love because of the style he plays with, Furious George, right? Like, he is an incredibly fun player to watch, but he's not like Trey Smith's deal. Trey Smith might be the best guard in football. Right. Creed Humphrey might be the best center in football. Chris Jones might be the best defensive tackle in football. All these Patrick Mahomes might be the best quarterback. I just don't want to like mistake it for that. Okay. He's not that, but he's really good and the Chiefs need him. And if they can come in and get this to lessen their cap blow next year, and that's all they accomplish in the deal, that's probably pretty good. Next year's going to be a problem. Right. You know, the Chiefs don't ever want to take it down year. And when you look, they're going to clear some easy money. They'll clear Jawan Taylor. Right. They'll clear probably Travis Kelce. We think at this point there's going to be easy money coming off the books next year. And so that's going to help to some degree. But this could help a lot, because if you can lessen that $15 million down to whatever it is, and I'm not a cap guy, maybe it's 10. That helps next year when you've got to get other business done, when they probably have a lot of holes on the roster, but almost no money to work into free agency with. You know what I mean? What could $7 extra million do for the Chiefs next year in free agency when all these players leave? A lot. The answer is a lot. Look at what they did this offseason with almost no money. So
that's what they always do. Like, they're. Brett Veach is able to pull rabbits out of the hat every single year.
This is their wheelhouse.
He's got these cap issues all the time. That's why you know, when there's always this like kind of scared energy around, like, man, I don't know how they're going to navigate the cap. And I'm not saying you're doing this, but like in general, they've got all these cap issues, and how are they going to afford players? And what are they? Brett Veach is a master at navigating the cap. He's the best in the NFL at doing
well. He is and I don't want to take anything away from Brett Veach, because I agree with you. He's at least as good as anybody at that, but he also gets the benefit of having Mahomes and Reed, where guys want to come play for less than they might play somewhere else. And that helps. And he does a masterful job of identifying, finding, and continuing to massage it and make that happen. The wildest thing about how he manages the cap is how they do retain most of their stars. They've lost plenty of stars, but most of their stars, especially the ones they draft, they've been able to retain them. They're going to have their wide receiver room's about to get really expensive when it's not expensive at all right now. Like, all of these challenges that they're going to have to face down the road, it's pretty impressive to watch them navigate the draft into the future plans. They have to hit on players in the draft, but then it's all the great work they've done, Tommy, when you also throw in the wrench of how miserable it's been to try to find a consistent left tackle, it's pretty wild. No matter how many swings and misses they've taken at how much money they pay in Jawan Taylor
now.
Like, they don't make all the right decisions. They just make all the decisions they make fit. And that's what's pretty crazy. So I won't be shocked at all if Ricky Scoops. I won't be surprised at all if Ricky Scoops is right about this one, because it does make some sense for them to go after either Carl Loftus or McDuffie and go after them now, because you don't want to just sit there on that money this year, right? Like, you don't want to sit with $20 million against the cap. If you can use it to help you next year, use it to help you next year. Now, again, I'm not a cap expert. I don't know how that all works. I don't know how they calculate that stuff. I don't know how it works against the number. But if there is any way you can front load a deal to take the burden now versus next year, do it. do it. And I won't be surprised at all. Now, there are no deadlines, correct?
I don't believe so. I mean, I think they can do this whenever. And they may not want to do it once the season starts at that point. And Karloff just may not want to either. So I would imagine if they want to do something, it's got to be relatively quickly.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, and welcome back in here to Sports Daily as we get you rocking and rolling on this Thursday. Thursdays mean K-State Conversations with Tim Fitzgerald of GoPowerCat.com. Fitz on vacation. Has us rejoined again by Ryan Gilbert. And Ryan, we appreciate it. Good to have you back, man. How have you been?
I've been good, guys. How's everything going with y'all?
It's good. We're in the dog days here. Everybody's just trying to get and make our way to football season. Big 12 media days in the books. K-State, we'll start with football. We'll just jump right in, is one of the favorites. There are a bunch of them this year in the Big 12. I would agree with that. Would you agree with that? And what were some of your big takeaways from Frisco and media days?
Yeah, there's a lot of good quality teams up at the top of this league. And of course, Kansas State is included in that list. But, you know, obviously Chris Klieman had some great things to say about some of the other contenders in the top of the league, Arizona State, Iowa State's on there, Baylor. And you look at Kansas State's schedule, Texas Tech, obviously, you know, Kansas State does not have to play Arizona State, but you know, you're playing those other three teams I mentioned. And so the schedule is not particularly easy for Kansas State. I know there's a lot that can change throughout the course of a season. You know, you look back to where we were last year and, you know, teams were a lot better than they were supposed to be. Teams were worse there than supposed to be. So a lot can change, of course, but Kansas State's got, some tough games on the list. And I know we've harped on Iowa State a lot, and that's a really important game. I don't think it makes or breaks the season to open up the year out in Ireland, but that's one that's going to be big to set the tone for Kansas State.
Ryan, everything starts with Avery Johnson, as we know, and taking another step forward in his development and his career tenure at Kansas State. We saw a season ago the success that he had, the explosive and dynamic plays, but then we also saw, you know, a little bit of youth and some mistakes that he made throughout the course of the season. What are your expectations for him as he has another year under his belt as the starter for Kansas State?
It's time for Avery Johnson to take that next step as a quarterback. And everybody knows what his talent level can get to. I mean, he's a four-star recruit, shouldn't need much of an endorsement from anybody that's followed him throughout his football career. But he's got to grow and get better. And as a true sophomore, he had his fair share of mistakes, 10 interceptions for Avery Johnson. You look back at, you know, maybe the game at BYU in Provo, a lot went wrong in that game, but Avery Johnson certainly kind of let things unravel. And, you know, that was, I don't want to say the moment was too big for him, but that was definitely a learning experience in a hostile environment that I think he knows now that, you know, you've truly got to take things one play at a time. You can't get everything back in one play. You know, you got to chip away when you're down and when you're hitting adversity, just truly hitting the reset button, not letting things kind of snowball. So obviously maturity wise, I think he's ready to be more of that leader. You know, last year at this time, Avery Johnson, and we talked about this at media days, he knew, you know, you've got to be the leader as a quarterback. That is your job. You know, people are going to look up to you. Where we are now, though, he's just much more comfortable in that position. It remains true that he knows he has to be a leader, but now with the year under his belt as the starter, he just kind of feels more confident and ready to be that guy. So decision-making is going to have to be a little bit better as well. You know, I mentioned those interceptions. Some of those were just misfires, but you know, Avery Johnson's accuracy can get better. You know, maybe, you know, throwing guys open, whether, you know, wait till they're open. You've got to just make those quick, decisive throws. So he's going to have to take some steps this year. And obviously he's had some highlights throughout his career at Kansas State, but eliminating some of those mistakes will be key in 2025.
They will be. I think his weaponry, Ryan Gilbert, GoPowerCat.com, managing editor, joining us here on Sports Daily. His weaponry, I think, is going to be fine. I know it's new faces in a lot of places at receiver, but he's got all those tight ends, whatever they can get out of Lincoln Cure, Dylan Edwards is back in the swing. I think my biggest concern on this team, Ryan, is what happens on the offensive line. Is this group going to be good enough to get K-State where it wants to be, which is the Big 12 champion?
I would say the upside is certainly there. Brian Hanley, who's one of our football analysts, like PowerCat, he was at Media Days with us, and he said, you know, like you said, this team will go as far as the offensive line can take them. And, you know, with so many, you know, new pieces in there in that mix, a lot of it's just going to come down to gelling together. And it's very important. You know, you don't have that warm-up game against No Name State to open up the season. You've got a big game against Iowa State. So you've got to hit the ground running if you're that offensive line. And, you know, Kansas State in 2022, winning the Big 12, offensive line was great, played a big part in that. I don't want to say the offensive line was bad or poor last year, but I think K-State knows it can get back up to that elite level that it maybe once had the offensive line at. Won't be easy with Connor Riley departing to the Dallas Cowboys in the NFL. However, Connor Riley last year was, you know, co-offensive coordinator, had maybe some more on his plate. So K-State can get back to its offensive line coach, Brian Lepak, simply, you know, solely focusing on that offensive line rather than having to juggle some other stuff.
The running game is going to look different too going into this season. DJ Giddens not on the team anymore, and it's really Dylan Edwards. And I know that there are a couple of other notable guys in that running back room. Do you anticipate or imagine that Dylan Edwards will be the bell cow of the running game, or will we see more of a running back by committee like we did in the past couple of years?
That's interesting because Dylan Edwards in the bowl game 100% proved that he can be that down back, that bell cow, like you said. You know, he was great. He was able to handle the workload that he got, but you just look at Dylan Edwards, his structure, his strength, he's not the biggest guy in the world. And so can he carry the ball or touch the ball, you know, 20, 25 times a game throughout the course of a 12-game season? You know, I'm not sure if he's really equipped to be that DJ Giddens. Now, he proved he can, but over the course of a year, that might be a different story. Joe Jackson is absolutely going to be a part in the offense. How big? Obviously, that remains to be seen. But Dylan Edwards is just an interesting situation because of his pass catching abilities. And I know DJ Giddens could make some things happen through the air just off of, you know, some basic screens and checkdowns last year. But Dylan Edwards has got some true speed. And obviously, I know this was a topic last year that fans, you know, harped on, was the usage of Dylan Edwards. A lot of people wanted to see more of him. And so who knows, I guess, let me rephrase that. Dylan Edwards, who knows what he could be capable of, right? Like, I don't know if K-State fans or K-State has seen the ceiling of Dylan Edwards. You know, he's got the speed. I do think he kind of tapped into that and showed that off in the right bowl to close out last year. But Dylan Edwards, you know, I don't want to call him the gadget guy, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him splitting out wide, catching passes, jet sweeps, doing, you know, Matt Wells in the offense, doing anything they can to get him involved rather than just an ISO up the middle. Cause that was DJ Giddens' bread and butter. And if it wasn't broken, you don't have to fix it. So K-State was happy to hand the ball off to DJ Giddens, let him do his thing. I think Edwards, you got to get a little bit more creative with him.
I think it's interesting. It's only his frame. Right. The only reason we even have this conversation is because of his size. That dude touched the ball, it felt like, on every play in high school. Like he's, and I know high school is not the same as college, obviously, but maybe he just is a smaller dude that is capable of it. I think that's entirely possible. I don't know that I'm advocating for it, but I think he could handle it if they wanted to go that route.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you look at the NFL, there's small backs that are, I wouldn't say every down backs, but guys that have, you know, Darren Sproles is a great example of a guy that had a long career despite being a pretty small guy.
And I don't, how often did he carry the ball at K-State? I mean, I don't remember. It was a lot, though. It wasn't, yeah. He wasn't really like a gadget player, and he's right. No different, you know, than Dylan Edwards as far as size goes.
Yeah, I wish Fitz was here because Fitz, I'm a little too young for this. Fitz is the old head. He'll know. He'd have a better scouting report on Darren Sproles, right? But obviously he was, you know, he lasted a long time, college and NFL, with his usage.
We got to ask you about the new world of college athletics and college football and revenue sharing and salary caps and, you know, different things like that in college football and college sports and how it relates to Kansas State. I know the House settlement, you know, we're less than a month into that with revenue sharing and everything with these different schools. Have you guys seen any changes or any movement or direction as to the direction that K-State's going?
As far as the last, you know, couple of weeks since July hit, not really. That rev share, I guess we haven't necessarily seen a whole lot of the impacts of that. But you look at the roster size and House, all that, you know, Kansas State had to let some guys go. I'm sure you guys have touched on that a lot with Fitz over the last couple of months. But you're seeing a smaller roster, and you know it's unfortunate for you don't know what's going to happen, and so you have to tell these guys, hey, might be in your best interest to go find a spot just so you know that you can play. Obviously, you know, rules change, and so these guys, you know, a lot of them aren't going to just come back, but it's unfortunate that K-State had to let go of some guys that, you know, truly, you know, you look at over the last couple of years, you know, a Brendan Mott, a DJ Giddens, you know, some of these guys, who knows if they would have been given a chance if it was a, you know, that 105 size was a thing or not. So over the last couple of years, there hasn't been a whole lot of maybe notable movement with this rev share. But I think over the coming months and coming years, we'll see kind of the changes of that come to life.
So do you think, is K-State, I assume K-State will have no problem getting to the number of 20-ish million. How much of that are they going to carve out for basketball, men's and women's, I suppose? That's been a huge topic, is what happens with these schools that are very interested in being good at both, and how do they divvy that up? Have they given any indication of that yet?
Yeah, they're obviously, the numbers aren't publicly out there, but you know, football gets a big chunk of it, and then basketball, followed by, you know, women's basketball, like you said, and then the rest is kind of just sparingly shared throughout the rest of the athletic of teams. But yeah, football, men's basketball, women's basketball are definitely your big winners there in terms of that 20-ish million.
Ryan Gilbert, GoPowerCat.com. What do you guys have for us this week?
Man, you know, I'm trying to hold down the fort with Fitz out of town on vacation. You know, I'm trying to run the site. Obviously, we'll have articles up every day, and a podcast with myself and Cole Carmody is going to go up here in, I think, about a couple hours at 11 o'clock on the YouTube channel. So be sure to check that out.
We will. GoPowerCat.com. Ryan Gilbert, follow him on X and everywhere else. Ryan, we appreciate you stepping in this week.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys very much.
There goes Ryan Gilbert. Good stuff there. Yeah, Tommy, man, if you told me right now that the K-State offensive line would be, let's call it good. Let's just call it good. I think they got a great, great chance to get it done this year.
Yeah, I mean, I love the fact that, you know, that's going to be probably a major focus of, you know, making sure that offensive line takes another step forward. Because, I mean, that's going to be key, especially when you are having to block for Dylan Edwards and when you need to protect Avery Johnson, who's a mobile type quarterback and all of that. You've got to have a solid offensive line. And so if they can take that step forward and be a good to great offensive line, that's probably going to be the key to whether or not Kansas State can compete for a Big 12 title. That's going to wrap things up for us here on Sports Daily on a Thursday. Our thanks to Ryan Gilbert filling in for Tim Fitzgerald on GoPowerCat.com. If you missed any of that conversation about the Wildcats, you can go back and listen to it anytime on the free Odyssey app. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we're talking to Katie Woods from the NBC World Series. As that gets going, just a matter of days, and so we'll talk to her and get you previewed for the Royals back in action for a weekend series in Miami. For Max Power and Jacob Albrock, I'm Tommy Caster. We'll see you tomorrow.